All right, let's dive into colonial India between 1857 and 1947.
Definitely a fascinating period.
You know, it's amazing all the stuff you sent over. Historical accounts, academic papers, even some personal stories.
Yeah.
And they all kind of point to the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
It seems like in colonial India, newspapers and journals, they weren't just reporting the news.
Right.
They were actually shaping it. Maybe even sparking resistance to British rule.
It really is incredible to think about the power of the press, you know?
Yeah.
Even before we had things like the internet or social media,
Absolutely.
just the printed word on paper mobilizing people.
Exactly. So our mission today is to figure out how this whole modern public sphere emerged in colonial India.
Oh, okay.
How did it become a tool for political change? And what kind of impact did it have on society?
Well, you know, a good place to start is by realizing that India already had these really vibrant communication networks.
Right, like all those bustling marketplaces,
Right,
the
exactly.
debates and everything.
Yeah, lively debates, yeah. But think even further back. Temples, for example. They weren't just places of worship.
Okay, yeah.
They were social hubs where people would gather and exchange ideas, you know, build alliances, even political ones.
Right.
So these pre-existing networks kind of set the stage, you know,
Yeah.
for the public sphere that was totally transformed once the printing press arrived.
Okay, so the printing press arrives from Europe.
Yep.
That's a game changer.
Absolutely. And suddenly, newspapers and journals start appearing in all these different languages, including Urdu. And what's really interesting is how these traditional ideas of like loyalty got mixed up with these new concepts,
Okay.
like public good and public opinion.
Oh, interesting. Can you give me an example of that?
Sure. The Litton Gazette.
Okay.
It was an Urdu journal published in Delhi. It really shows how this new media landscape started to reflect both the traditional values
Right.
and those newer ideas about civic engagement.
So the printing press, it wasn't just new technology, it was new ways of thinking about society and politics.
Exactly. And as those ideas spread, the press became, you know, a very powerful platform
Okay.
for dissent and critique.
So it wasn't just reporting the news anymore, it was challenging the status quo.
Right.
How did that play out?
Well, you see newspapers and journals start to pop up that represent Indian voices,
Okay.
and they begin to challenge colonial policies and question the narratives that were being put forth by the British.
So the press became like a voice for the unheard, a way to push back against the government.
Exactly. And we see this with the rise of organizations like the Cheplakhan Literacy Society and the Mahajana Sabha.
Right.
They actually predate the Indian National Congress,
Oh, wow.
but they served as really important platforms for, you know, voicing concerns and mobilizing people around common grievances.
So it sounds like these organizations were essential in building a sense of identity and purpose.
They absolutely were.
Yeah.
And one powerful example of how personal experiences fed into these movements is the story of S.N. Banerjee. He was brilliant, but he faced huge hurdles trying to join the Indian civil service.
Right, which is a path to power.
Exactly. But it was mostly closed off to Indians.
Right.
And when he was finally dismissed on what many considered flimsy grounds,
Wow.
you know, it resonated with tons of people who were experiencing similar discrimination.
That must have been incredibly frustrating for him.
Oh, it was. But this experience, you know, it fueled his passion to create change. He went on to found the Indian Association in Calcutta in 1876,
Okay.
really showing how personal struggles could actually ignite these larger movements.
Yeah, and I bet the press probably played a role in amplifying his message
Absolutely.
and connecting him with people.
Newspapers and journals were essential, you
Yeah,
know, for
yeah.
spreading nationalist ideas, mobilizing people towards the fight for independence. Think of people like Vivekananda and Bankim Chandra Chatterjee. Their writings, which circulated widely in print, you know, they ignited a sense of cultural pride
Okay.
and reinterpreted history through an Indian lens.
So the press was helping to create an Indian identity separate from the colonial one.
Yes, and it helped fuel a burgeoning nationalist movement. But there's another side to this story,
Okay.
a bit more complicated. While the press was uniting Indians against British rule,
Right.
it also unfortunately contributed to divisions along religious lines.
Wait, so the press was both uniting and dividing at the same time?
Yeah, it sounds paradoxical, but that's history for you. As newspapers and journals became these powerful platforms for promoting, you know, distinct cultural and religious identities, they sometimes unintentionally played into the hands of those seeking to divide
Yeah.
rather than unite. And of course, you have British policies like separate electorates, dividing voters by religion, which only made these tensions worse.
So you're saying that even policies that seemed well-intentioned
Right.
could actually have divisive consequences.
Exactly. And it's so important to understand how those seemingly well-intentioned policies in the context of this, you know, burgeoning media landscape
Yeah.
could accidentally fuel religious tensions. In fact, the concepts of majority and minority were imposed on India's very diverse population during this time, you know, with some long-lasting effects.
It's a powerful reminder, I think, of how historical forces can shape even the language we use to describe ourselves.
It really is. And speaking of shaping narratives, you can't overlook Gandhi.
Yeah.
And his very unique approach to utilizing the press.
Right. I've always been fascinated by how he was able to mobilize millions of people
Right.
through peaceful means.
Yeah.
How did the press play into that?
Well, Gandhi, he recognized the immense power of the press.
Yeah.
And he used it brilliantly. Newspapers and journals, they became his tools for organizing protests, spreading his philosophy,
mm-hmm.
and reaching a way wider audience than he ever could have with just speeches.
So he turned the press into like an instrument for a peaceful revolution. It wasn't about inciting violence. It was about swaying hearts and minds through words.
Exactly. He understood the power of public opinion and how the press could shape it. Now, you also asked us to take a closer look at the Cripps mission of 1942.
Right, right.
This was a defining moment in India's fight for independence.
I remember reading about that. It was when the British were trying to secure India's cooperation during World War II.
Exactly.
By offering them some form of self-governance after the war, right?
Right. And the press, they had a field day with it. Newspapers and journals were just buzzing. You know, analysis, opinions, reports on the proposals and reactions from different political groups.
Oh, wow. So it was a time of intense public debate.
Totally.
Fueled by the press.
And all of this was happening with the backdrop of a global war.
Yeah, yeah.
India caught in the middle.
Right.
So the stakes were incredibly high.
Okay, so we've got this rapidly evolving public sphere, a press that's a powerful tool for unity and division, and a pivotal moment like the Cripps mission. It's getting really complex.
That's the beauty of history, right?
Yeah.
Full of twists and turns and interwoven threads. And as we go further into this period, we'll uncover even more layers of complexity.
All right, before we move on, I want to make sure our listener is with us.
Right.
Because this is a lot to take in. What are some of the key takeaways from this first part of our deep dive?
Well, first and foremost, never underestimate the power of the press.
Yeah.
It's not just about reporting. It's about shaping narratives, influencing people's opinions, and sometimes even sparking revolutions.
Right. And we've seen how the press in colonial India was both a force for unity and a source of division, really reflecting those complex social dynamics.
Exactly. And we've also touched on how individuals like S.N. Banerjee
right.
and movements like Gandhi's nonviolent resistance used the press very strategically to advance their goals.
It's a story of power and influence.
Yeah.
And the enduring impact of words in shaping history. And we're just getting started.
There's so much more to uncover. But for now, let's give our listeners some time to digest.
Okay, sounds good.
Then we'll dive into those later years leading up to India's independence in 1947.
All right.
Yeah.
So before we went to, I guess it wasn't a break, is it?
Not really, no.
But we were discussing, you know, how the printing press changed communication.
Right.
A new public sphere. It became, you know, a real tool for both unity and division.
Exactly.
And as we get closer to independence in 47,
mm-hmm.
it's fascinating to see how the press continued to shape things.
It really is.
I'm especially curious about how people dealt with this media environment. Mm-hmm. It seems like it was getting more and more complex.
Yeah.
Were they overwhelmed by all the different viewpoints, all the publications?
Well, you know, it was a lively environment, maybe even a little chaotic at times.
I can imagine.
Just try to picture it, limited access to radio or TV.
Right.
Newspapers and journals were the main source of information.
Wow. So they had a lot more influence than the press does today.
Without a doubt. People relied on them for, well, everything. News, analysis, even entertainment. They would read their newspapers, then discuss with friends and family. They went to rallies, you know. Civic engagement was part of everyday life.
It really makes you think, have we lost something with, you know, instant news?
Yeah, maybe.
Social media and everything.
Maybe. But let's get back to those publications.
Okay.
Because there was just such a huge variety. We're talking English, Hindi, Urdu, Bengali, Tamil, so many languages, each with their own perspective and audience.
It wasn't just one narrative, it was a chorus of voices.
Exactly. And you can really see how the debates in the press reflected the politics. You had folks advocating for complete independence, others who, would have preferred dominion status within the British Commonwealth, and then you had those who were pushing for, partition along religious lines.
Did the press actually contribute to the push for partition, or was it just reflecting existing tensions?
It's hard to say for certain, but the press definitely amplified the calls for a separate Muslim state.
We can't forget about Gandhi.
Of course not.
He was still a master of the press,
Absolutely.
promoting his vision of a unified, independent India.
Right. His message of nonviolent resistance, it resonated with so many people,
Right.
and newspapers and journals were key to spreading that message.
It's amazing how different leaders and movements all use the press to influence the public. It wasn't just about reporting the news anymore.
Exactly.
It was about advancing a specific agenda.
That's a great point. And it's really clear in how they covered big events like the Crips mission.
How did the press shape that narrative?
Well, they documented everything. The proposals, reactions from leaders, the debates, even the public's response. All this coverage helped create like a collective memory of this crucial moment.
So they were creating an archive
Yeah, in real time.
of how it would be remembered. Wow.
Shaping how it would be remembered, right?
So they weren't just reporting it, they were influencing how it would be understood.
Exactly. And this leads to another really important point, contrasting narratives.
You mentioned how some publications, particularly those promoting, cultural or religious identities, could make divisions worse.
Yeah. And in the years leading up to independence, we see this play out. For
Okay.
example, Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, a novelist, he used his platform to promote a sense of Hindu pride
Right.
and patriotism, but unfortunately, his work often portrayed Muslims as, well, as the bad guys.
Not.
And that fed into existing communal tensions.
It's like even narratives that were meant to inspire would
Right.
have unintended consequences.
Absolutely, especially in that political climate.
Yeah. What about Muslim writers? How did they use the press to, shape their own narrative?
Many turn to history, to counter the British critiques of Islam and to foster a sense of Muslim identity.
Okay.
Take Altaf Hussein Hali. He wrote this epic poem, Musaddas,
Right.
and it lamented the decline of Muslim power, but it also celebrated their past
So
glories.
he was reclaiming their narrative, reminding people of a time when, they held more power.
Exactly. And then you had Abdul Halim Sharar, a novelist. He wrote romantic tales set in places like Sicily and Spain during Muslim rule, really evoking the sense of nostalgia and pride.
It sounds like both Hindu and Muslim writers were using the press to create competing visions of India's past, present, and future.
I think that's a great way to put it.
Wow.
And all of this was happening in the pages of newspapers and journals
Yeah.
across the country.
It's a reminder that history is never simple. It's a tapestry of different perspectives,
Right?
interpretations, and often conflicting narratives.
Absolutely. And the press was there, reflecting and shaping those narratives during this key period in India's history.
And as we get closer to those final years before independence, I'm curious about how the press dealt with the turmoil and, the eventual partition.
That's a great question, and it takes us to some really complex aspects of this story. But before we get into that, let's just pause and think about what we've learned so far. What stands out to you?
Well, it's clear that the press was more than just a source of news. It was a battleground for ideas, a platform for, political action,
Right.
and a powerful tool for shaping public opinion.
Yeah.
It's really amazing to think about the influence it had during such a pivotal moment in history.
Yeah, I agree. And what I find really fascinating is how the press, even with its limitations, its internal contradictions,
Right.
it helped to create a sense of national identity.
Mm.
And ultimately, it contributed to India's independence.
It's like a reminder of how just words on paper
Right.
can really change the course of history.
Absolutely. And as we get into those final years leading up to 1947, we'll see how the press grappled with, partition, the violence, and the birth of two new nations.
All right, let's dive into that final chapter. This is really captivating.
I agree. We'll see how they navigated this turbulent period and what role they played in shaping the landscape of India and Pakistan.
Okay, so this is at the final chapter. India's independence and partition in 1947.
Definitely a time of both hope and, well, heartbreak.
Yeah. That dream of a unified India, it gave way to a divided subcontinent.
It did.
And I imagine the press was right there in the middle of it all.
Oh, they were. They faced immense challenges, you know, with the violence, the displacement of people, and of course, all the political maneuvering that led to partition. It was just chaos.
Yeah.
A dangerous time to be a journalist.
Did the press make things worse? Or did they try to, you know, calm things down?
It's tough to say. Some publications, unfortunately, they did stir up hatred.
Yeah.
With, you know, biased reporting and inflammatory rhetoric. A tragic example of how the press, even with good intentions, can sometimes make things worse.
Right. Were there any efforts to use the press for, you know, promoting peace?
Yeah, definitely. Many journalists, they risked their lives to report on the violence and to call for peace and unity. They documented the suffering. You know, exposed the brutality. They challenged the rhetoric that was fueling the conflict.
So it was like this battle for the soul of the nation.
Yeah.
And is it playing out in the newspapers?
Exactly. Journalists had to make tough choices, often facing threats from all sides.
Wow. Did the press have any influence on the actual decision to partition the country?
It's hard to measure the direct impact.
Yeah.
But the press definitely shaped public opinion. It reflected the anxieties, the aspirations of the time, the arguments for and against partition. They were everywhere, you know, in the newspapers, and people were really engaged.
So even if the final decision was made by, you know, the leaders,
right,
the press created the context for those decisions.
Exactly. It was the platform for these crucial issues, the place where they were debated, analyzed, and ultimately internalized by the public.
It's interesting how those conversations from so long ago are still relevant today. Like the issues of identity, belonging, they were so central to partition.
They were.
And they're still important in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh.
Absolutely. It really highlights the impact of that period and how the press shaped our understanding of it.
As we're wrapping up here, I want to go back to that idea of a public sphere.
Yeah.
How did the press, even with all the chaos of partition, helped to develop a public sphere in India?
That's a great question. Even with the challenges, the press still provided a space for debate and for dissent. Even after independence, newspapers and journals, they remained vital platforms for holding the government accountable, you know, challenging policies, giving voice to the people.
So the press helped to build a foundation for a democratic society.
Exactly. Where freedom of expression, the right to dissent, were at least in principle protected. And that legacy continues. The press in India, even with new challenges in this digital age, it still shapes public discourse, holds power accountable. It gives a voice to those who might not otherwise have one.
It's a reminder of how important a free press is.
Yes.
Not just in India, but everywhere.
It is. And it shows us that we need to engage with the media critically, recognize its potential for both good and bad, and support those journalists who are committed to truth and accountability.
Well said. So, as we come to the end of our deep dive into the role of the press in colonial India, I want to thank you, our listener, for joining us. It's been a fascinating look at this complex and pivotal period.
It really has.
And remember, the learning doesn't stop here. We encourage you to keep exploring, dive deeper into these sources, keep asking questions, keep engaging with the past, because it helps us understand the present and it helps us shape the future. Until next time.